Quandamooka people who are the traditional custodians of the land in which we gather here this morning, and I'd like to pay respect to elders past and present and extend that respect to any Indigenous Australians who may be present here this morning. Housekeeping, just for those members in the public gallery, in the event of an evacuation, and for councillors, I would ask that you remain calm and follow my directions. The emergency exit is through the gallery doors on your left and down the stairwell stairwell into the exit on Bloomfield Street. Public conduct at meetings is stipulated under our Standing Orders Section 32, which states that all members of the public present at a meeting must not, without the prior approval of the chairperson, make any audio or video recording or take any photograph, remain quiet and not disrupt the meeting in any way, not bring into the meeting any signs, placards or items that may cause a hazard or interfere with any person present, be suitably dressed, turn all mobile devices to silent mode, leave the meeting to take any calls. As the chairperson, it is my responsibility to warn a member of the public present at a meeting who is not complying with any or all of these requirements that I may, with or without such warning, require that person to leave the meeting and not return for a period decided by the chairperson, and that could include future meetings. Councillors, we do have a leave of absence required to be moved and seconded this morning for Councillor Edwards, who is attending the National Congress for ALGA in Canberra. So can I please have a mover and seconder the leave of absence be granted for Councillor Edwards? Move Councillor Gleeson, seconded Councillor Bishop. Those in favour? Those against? That motion is carried. Now, is Councillor Tolte on the line? Okay. All right. So just I'll take that vote again. Thanks, Councillor. Those in favour? Against? That's unanimous. Councillor Elliott is absent and Councillor Tolte has not yet joined the meeting. Speaking of which, we actually need this motion anyway for her to join the meeting, I think. Can I have a mover and seconder that Councillor Julie Tolte be permitted to join the general meeting by teleconference? Move Councillor Gleeson, seconded Councillor Boglari. Those in favour? Against? That motion is carried unanimously and Councillor Elliott is absent. Next item on the agenda, it's my great pleasure this morning to welcome Pastor Marvin Donnell from Redlands Community Baptist Church. He's a member of our Minister's Fellowship, and I will now ask him to lead us in a brief devotional segment. Over to you, Pastor.
Thank you, ma'am.
There you go.
I was raised on a farm between the ages of 15 and 20. I had probably 8 near-death experiences. I was nothing more than a sinner, a whoremonger, a drunkard, and a blasphemer. Though I was raised in church and had over a 9-year pen for not missing Sunday school. On January the 5th, 1964, while serving in the United States Air Force, outside Husumachi, Japan, about 40 miles from the Ginzo or downtown Tokyo, a fellow airman shared with me Romans chapter 10, verse 9 and 10, which didn't make any difference, but verse 11 says, "For whosoever believeth on him shall not be ashamed." And the first verse was, if you confess with your mouth the Lord Jesus and believe in your heart that God hath raised him from the dead, thou shalt be saved. And I thought, well, I need to go back when I saw that word ashamed and look at this verse. And I said, well, I think I've talked about Christ. But then the next phrase, believe that he had raised him from the dead. And I was thinking, I never met anyone that rose from the dead. But that day, a man asked me to pray, and I prayed these words. I do not know if you're the Lord or not, but if you are, I want you to forgive my sin and change my life. I was drunk 4 days out of the last 12. I've never had another alcoholic drink since then. Never wanted one. I did not choose him. He chose me. In 2 Corinthians chapter 5, it says, to wit, that God was in Christ reconciling the world unto himself, and not imputing their trespasses unto them, and hath committed unto us the word of reconciliation. Now then we are ambassadors for Christ. As though God did beseech you by us, we pray you in Christ's stead, be ye reconciled to God. For he hath made him to be sin for us, who knew no sin, that we might be made the righteousness of God in him. An ambassador is one who is sent by a sovereign or a government to another nation. I was sent to this country in 1968, my second year of Bible college, in a mission meeting. The Lord spoke to me as he did Paul on the road to Damascus. I only heard five words. I've never heard more than five words in my life, so I don't have nightmares and all these things of people speaking and hear voices. But the words came this: go serve me in Australia. I had a lot of opposition to get here. I came here in 1975 when Gough Whitlam was Prime Minister. I was told by many that I could not get into Australia at the time. And I would tell them, that's not my problem, that's God's. My wife and I have been here 44 plus years now. We celebrate our 50th anniversary on Friday. And Jesus Christ has made all these things possible. He has not left me destitute. But I would like to read in closing, before I have prayer, from Revelation chapter 22. And behold, I come quickly, and my reward is with me to give every man according to his work shall be. I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end, the first and the last. Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may have right to the tree of life, and may enter in through the gates into the city. For without are dogs and sorcerers and whoremongers and murderers and idolaters and whosoever loveth and maketh a lie. I, Jesus, have sent mine angel to testify unto you these things in the churches. I am the root and the offspring of David, and the bright and morning star. And the Spirit and the bride say, come. And let him that heareth say, come. And let him that is athirst come. And whosoever will, let him take of the water of life freely. He which testifieth these things saith, surely I come quickly. Amen. In the Synoptic Gospels, all three speak of a parable of the fig tree. When it begins to put forth leaves, you know, summer's nigh, it's even at the doors, he said. But he said, I say unto thee that this generation shall not pass until all these things are fulfilled. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall not pass away. He spoke that on the Mount of Olives of his Passion Week. And he was telling the people when he would come back. And that was the last of what he said to them that day, or that evening. He said this, because Israel would become a nation again, and that was the budding of the fig tree. And before that generation passes, he is saying, I will return. When he's coming, no man knoweth. Anybody who says they know, he won't come that day. But he said he's coming, and the time is drawing nigh. It will not be doomsday. It will be another 1,000 years plus before this whole world is done away with. But I stand before you today as his ambassador, sent by him who is the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. I bid you, as you work and do your labor for the city, that you do it as unto Him who is King of all. Let's close in prayer. Father, we know that Thou sent Your Son. We ask, Lord, Your blessings on all those who hear what has been said this morning, and that You would bless each and every one in each and every household. Thank You for this city. Thank You that there are many who stand for You. Lord, we know we'll never be popular, but we ask, Lord, that You would bless this council and that You would help them to do that which is right for this city, and that Your name would be honored. And we ask it in Christ Jesus' name. Amen.
Councillors, just a reminder of declaration of interest on any items of business. Councillors are reminded of their responsibilities in relation to a councillor's material, personal interest and conflict of interest at a meeting. Full details of that of Division 5A of the Local Government Act 2009 and the appendix to the running sheet, ladies and gentlemen. Details of those responsibilities are summarised in your agendas. You can make a declaration at any time during the meeting. I haven't been advised of any recognitions of achievement, but I would like to just take this opportunity to wish the Deputy Mayor a very happy birthday. He's been 21 now for 43 years, I believe. Okay. So happy birthday on behalf of all of us here today. I'm sure you're thrilled that you can be sharing your birthday with us at a general meeting. Moving on to receipt and confirmation of minutes. I need a mover and seconder thanks for the minutes of the general meeting held on the 5th of June 2019, that they be confirmed. Moved Councillor Hughes, seconded Councillor Mitchell. Any items of correctness? Being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Against? And Councillor Tolte, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Welcome to the meeting. That is passed unanimously. Thank you, Councillors. Matters outstanding from minutes of previous general meeting. CEO.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. The first item is the opportunity to participate in the joint local government activity, the regional approach to waste and resource management. That report's coming towards the end of the year. And the second item, urgent business, that purchase of land for conservation purposes at Ormiston is listed on today's agenda item at 19.1.
Thank you, CEO. Moving on to public participation. In accordance with Section 31 of Policy 3127, Council's Meeting Standing Orders, a period of 15 minutes may be made available by resolution to permit members of the public to address the local government on matters of public interest relating to local government. Our priority is given to those who actually make a written application to the CEO. So with that, can I please have a mover and seconder that the meeting be adjourned for a 15-minute public participation segment to allow members of the public to address council on matters of public interest related to local government. Moved Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Golay. Those in favour? Those against? That's carried unanimously. Thanks, councillors. I've been advised Steve Crowe, representing Arnold Development Consultants regarding Rocky Passage Road, would like to address us this morning. Just, Mr. Crowe, you may have seen some of the signage around chambers regarding public participation at meetings. It's council's usual practice to require any person wishing to address the meeting to state their name, the suburb or organisation that they represent and the subject they wish to speak about. The information is recorded in the minutes of our meeting, which is a public document available for inspection at Council's Administration Building and published on Council's website. Also like to advise you that the meeting is recorded in audio video and that by speaking you acknowledge and agree that the recording video may be placed in the public domain. So any person addressing this meeting will state their name and suburb, the organisation they represent and the subject they wish to speak about. Stand unless you're unable to do so. Act and speak with decorum. Be respectful and courteous. Make no comments directed at any individual council employee, council or member of the public, ensuring that all comments relate to council as a whole. I do have responsibilities as chairperson to consider each application on its merits and consider any relevant matter in making my decision to allow or disallow a person to address the local government. I give priority to members of the public who have made written application to the CEO to address the meeting. and also it's my responsibility to determine the number of speakers based on the number of persons wanting to speak and the time available. One final responsibility that I have is to withdraw the approval to address council before the time period has elapsed. Just a reminder for everyone in the room that debate or discussion cannot be entered into at this time. And with that, I will ask Mr. Crowe to present to council. Thank you.
Madam Mayor, members of the council, thank you very much for the opportunity to present very briefly today and speak on a proposed development application at 147 to 205 Rocky Passage Road, Redland Bay. The proposed development, Solitude Healing Retreat, is a small-scale eco-resort comprising tourist accommodation and ancillary facilities on a large rural lot of just over 14 hectares at 147 to 205 Rocky Passage Road. The site currently has 540 metres of rural-style road frontage to Rocky Passage Road on the east side of the premises, and additionally has about 20 metres of direct frontage to the Logan River to the southwest. Currently, the site is improved by two existing dwellings with a collection of ancillary sheds and garage-type structures. The primary or main dwelling that's currently located is centrally located on the site, and a smaller dwelling is located approximately 150 metres to the south of the main dwelling. A pool area and tennis courts lie immediately west of the former main dwelling. The premises have been vacant and largely unused for the past 3 years, and unfortunately on-site facilities have fallen into disrepair. The new development is aimed at providing health and well-being experiences and services for tourists to the Redlands, including spa, yoga, meditation and traditional medicine treatments. The target market is predominantly adults, individuals and groups seeking health and relaxation. Development is designed to take full advantage of the proximity of the site to the Logan River and awesome views to the north, south and east due to the site's elevated position. Considerable effort has been made by the development team to ensure that the design of the new facilities themselves sit comfortably within the natural environment as opposed to dominating or exploiting it. The tourist accommodation use will comprise a mix of one-bedroom studios, two-bedroom apartments and three-bedroom villas spread over the development site. It's intended to be a premium product targeting high-yield tourists, both domestic and international. The resort is aimed at an emerging tourism market and represent an evolution in tourism accommodation and tourist product for the Redlands. However, in terms of existing tourist accommodation, the proposal is similar to the Kingfisher Bay Resort on Fraser Island and the Lizard Island and Qualia Resorts on Hamilton Island. Visitors will typically arrive at the site in consolidated groups. It's anticipated that most will stay for defined blocks of time, 5, 7, 10, 14-day periods, depending on the nature of the retreat package that they've locked into. Principal resort facilities, being spa and treatment facilities and services, will operate with core hours between roughly 7:30 in the morning till 7:30 at night, Monday through Sunday. However, the dining, gym and some of the relaxation facilities available within the central core of the facilities themselves will likely operate slightly beyond those hours. Average on-site visitor numbers are likely to be roughly 100 to 120 people a day, with average occupancy across the resort around 70% of full capacity per month. A total of 65 car parking spaces have been provided on site as part of the development. The proposal also provides coach set-down areas suitable for up to three standard-sized buses. It's expected that a significant number of visitors will travel to the site via coach and will not arrive by private vehicle. Facilities will be operated by about 30 full-time staff, drawn from the Redlands as well, divided roughly over two shifts. Development is low-key, both in terms of its actual physical footprint and the character of the use. In terms of the physical footprint and impacts, the proposed development comprises tourist accommodation and ancillary facilities nestled within the site and forming a number of discrete precincts. A low-rise and dispersed building form with a maximum building height of two storeys across the site and buildings of a generally domestic nature in both size and scale. The development's plans and aims to retain the majority of the site in the natural state as open space, with the built form being undertaken on land that represents less than 10% of the site as a whole. The development is limited to the already cleared portions of the site, and no additional significant clearing of the site is proposed as part of the development. The design has been heavily influenced by specific on-site environmental features, with the proposal incorporating local natural and wood and stone materials. The design incorporates elements reflective of the local area, including traditional pavilion roofing and flexible indoor-outdoor living spaces set amongst existing landscape areas, and within the context of considerable retained on-site vegetation. The proposal reflects a resort lifestyle with a sense of tradition, luxury and security with an environmentally sensitive contemporary design. I'll just hand over briefly, if I could, to our project architect, who's just going to speak very, very briefly about some of the changes that were made as part of the information request process.
Just to note that it is 5 minutes, so if you don't mind being efficient with the time, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Madam Mayor and councillors, thank you very much. My name is John Rust. I'm an architect from Gerard Poole Designs, based on the Gold Coast. We've been working on this project for some time, and we've worked very closely with the council planning officers, and a little package that you have received just now from us highlights our design vision, our design direction, and we've illustrated 8 key items where we work closely with the planning officers with an RFI changing and modifying the design. As pointed out to you, you know, the project's about designing in harmony with the local environment. We've respected the rural landscape and environment. The buildings that we're proposing are in, you know, human scale, no more than two stories. We use a variety of natural colours and materials that are reflective of the native trees and vegetation on the block of land. We are aware of the ecological constraints. We've put the buildings into the areas that we can build in, and that the bushfires and the natural vegetation and privacies and setbacks are all have been well and truly achieved in our current design. I think that's about all I can add.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councillors, I haven't been advised of any other speakers, so can I have a motion that we resume our meeting proceedings? Thanks. Moved. Councillor Bishop seconded. Councillor Mitchell. Those in favour? Those against?
Aye.
That motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. I haven't been advised of any petitions or presentations, so on to order of business. Is there a motion to alter the order of business? Councillor Boglari?
I'd just like to move a motion to move item number 13.3, Rocky Passage Road, to the end of today's agenda, as the local councillor for that area is overseas and she's still having some difficulty obtaining some information. So, okay. Thank you.
Moved by Councillor Boglari, seconded by Councillor Hughes. Those in favour? Against?
Aye.
Motion carried unanimously. Thank you. I do need councillors, please, mover and seconder, to add a late confidential item to the agenda, which is Barrow Group Friday Limited versus RCC. Moved Councillor Hewlett, seconded Councillor Gleeson. Those in favour? Against? It's carried. And another, a mover and seconder for a late confidential item, Australian Innovation Centre Proprietary Limited versus RCC, that it be accepted to the agenda and discussed as item 19.5. Move Councillor Bishop, seconded Councillor Gleeson. Those in favour? Those against? That motion is carried unanimously. And just for clarity, the first item is 19.4, so the Barrow Group will be... Yeah, okay. Councillor Tolte, can you just confirm you're happy to receive those late items, both as 19.4 and 19.5?
Yes, Madam Mayor, happy to receive it.
Thank you. So just to be
clear... Yes, in both cases.
First one we accepted as 19.4 on the agenda, and the Innovation Centre will be as 19.5. Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Moving on to items on the agenda, item 12.1 is the May 2019 Monthly Financial Report. Move and second to that. That councillor. Councillor Bishop's moving it. Councillor Mitchell is seconding it. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Bishop?
No, only to acknowledge the very fine work that our officers do collectively across the organisation. I'd like to move the report. There's a question I'd like to ask.
Okay. Well, you've got the floor, so you want to ask that question now, Councillor?
Yeah, if I may, through you to probably our Chief Financial Officer in the first instance, when I look at page... It's page 17 of the report under capital expenditure. I just note that in the month of May 19, expenditure was at 65. By June 19, we get to 91,
252, which is quite a few million dollars discrepancy. Just if I could ask for a bit of an assessment of how things are going and where there are some changes, which I think you've touched on across the various departments. Just be useful to hear that for the community to be apprised of some of those.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Through you, as Chair, thank you, Councillor Bishop, for the opportunity. Capital expenditure, as you know, often straddles a few financial years due to its nature. So councillors may recall that at the start of 2018-19, Council adopted a capital programme, and then it's gone through a carryover review and two budget reviews, and the final budget review was on the 8th of May. So I've got a couple of highlights, and then I know my colleague, the General Manager Infrastructure and Operations, can talk to the ones in his area, and as we know, that's the bulk of it. But some of the highlights outside of infrastructure and operations, councillors may recall on the 8th of May, the final budget review encompassed two land purchases, one at Cleveland Point, and there was budget allocated, which increased the capital programme up to this 91 million figure, as you talked to, Councillor Bishop, for Birkdale. Due to the process, the information I have today is the Birkdale land acquisition may fall into the 1920 year. So that's in the order of $4 million. So that went through final budget review, is likely to be a carryover due to the process. Other carryovers that might interest councillors are the transformation project at Indigiscape, so that's of a capital nature, and that's on track, has a great project team running through that, so there'll be elements that get closed out this financial year and some will be carried forward into next year. Similar nature with the Wynnum Creek, that's progressing well this year. Councillors may recall we're going to draw down some borrowings to fund that work. My understanding is there's a contract in place, so everything's committed to, it's just the timing of the actual closeout of that project. That's in the order of $3 million on a par with Indigis. Smaller items to close out before I hand across to the General Manager Infrastructure and Operations. Probably you'll be interested in the fleet programme. We know that councillors created a reserve at the start of this year to put some funds for fleet, and our fleet manager is ensuring that those purchases really get the best return for council's money and the community money on that. So some will be closed out this financial year, and in the order of $640,000 will move into next year. And the final one that I'm proudly the sponsor of is the asset management project. That's been a project ongoing since 2016, councillors may recall, and that is nearing completion, but we're going to carry over, or propose to you, we carry over some funds into next year in the order of $475,000. So that sort of summarises about $10 million, Councillor Bishop, but I know Peter best wants to talk to some of the project in his department. So thank you, Peter.
I do want to talk to some of those. Thank you, Deborah. Madam Mayor, councillors, within INO we have infrastructure and operations. Thank you, councillor. Department 3000, from a financial perspective, we have 126 programs and projects, which then breaks down into 505 activities, smaller projects, and a collective of projects. We're looking to carry into next year 22. Of those projects to an estimated value of around $10.8 million, and I'll break it down into three areas, three tranches of that $10.8 million. The first tranche is what I call the city space, city infrastructure, parks and the like, and other marine type infrastructure. That's around $5.1 million. Then the water waste area, which principally looks at significant and complex upgrades and renewals of wastewater treatment plants, sewer network, water network, some of which will be carried out on North Stradbroke Island in a remote location. That's around $5.9 million. And then the smallest tranche, which is the city operations area, around $330,000 for some minor works in the city operations space. Of those 22 projects, the majority of them are either in procurement or have been procured and they're in work. Some are in a small number, and this is principally in the water wastewater area, are in final design, pending then going to market. For
for those activities. And the in the city operations space, they're all afoot, and they'll be closed out early in the next financial year.
Yeah, thank you. It was encouraging, and I think it's important just to get that update. And I also know from what officers were suggesting that the intention moving forward after a body of work that officers have been working on is to make sure in coming years that at the start of the year when plans can be ready to go as early as possible, that's a direction that people are trying to move in within the organisation, which is comforting. So thank you.
Any speakers against? If not, I'll put the motion. In favour? Against? Right. Councillor Tolte?
Aye.
Okay.
Yes, aye for the first one.
That's unanimous. Thanks, councillors. Councillors, item 12.2. Yep. Do you want to put that forward, councillor? Just item 12.2, your motion is...
Thank you, Mayor. In the council's officer's recommendation at item point 1, resolve to amend the starting time from 9:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. with consultation with my colleagues and peers, we have an opportunity to support a major event in our city, and I'm asking if we could potentially amend that 11 a.m. start to a 1 p.m. start. Sure. To allow councillors to support our city.
So
thank you.
Your motion will read to amend the start time of the special budget meeting from 9:30 to
1 p.m. If I may,
yeah,
thank you,
Mayor. So from 9:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. and rather from 1 p.m.
with a 1 p.m. start.
I don't know that we need an ending time.
No, we could be here all night.
Oh no, that was a change. So from 9:30, my apologies, 9:30 a.m. to 1 p.m.
The start time was originally advertised,
yes,
at 9:30. We had flagged that 11 a.m.
Yep,
may do that.
Yep.
We
and
are
then,
concerned we could be running
a
little
late. And then
to
publish that time as required.
So absolutely to meet that
so
requirement.
That my understanding, you're seconding that, thanks Councillor Boglow. My understanding, councillors, is that we will be able to witness the first whale watching tour leaving from Raby Bay, which is exciting for tourism in our city, earlier that morning. So that gives us an opportunity to do that and also get back here in time to consider our budget, which I'm sure we all can't wait for.
And in doing that, so...
we have a mover and seconder, so we're right. So just let me move Councillor Hughes. Just to be clear with the Minute Secretary, you've got that from moving it from 9:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. And seconded by Wendy. Okay. Would you like to speak to it now, Councillor Hughes?
Thank you, Mayor. It's important that we share this meeting time with our community as per legislation at noted, and also with the moving back to 1 p.m. that also allows that if for whatever reason we were running a little late, we are not holding up the public that also do come to these meetings as well. So it's a fair consideration to all. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Mayor. What time is this tourism event take place? Around 9 a.m. Well, look, the original intent of changing the time from 9:30 to 11 o'clock was to give officers and councillors time to prepare or to get answers ready for councillors. Every year on budget day, councillors throw a lot of last minute questions out to officers, and was the idea of changing it to 11 was to give officers that time to respond backwards and forwards to councillors. It wasn't so we can go out for a photo opportunity. I think this is budget day. I think that's going to take priority over over a photo op down at Raby Bay.
Thank you, councillor.
Leave it at 9:30 or 11, but I'm not going to support 1 o'clock. That's
okay, you have your entitled. Reason being that we've been invited by Kayak to witness the first and Sea Link to witness the first while watching boat going. It's an extra couple of hours, won't make any difference to the decisions on the day, and still allows time for questions and answers from officers. So I put the motion, councillor, unless there's another speaker for it. Yeah, no other speakers. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Against?
Aye.
The motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Bishop,
Councillor Williams, Councillor Tolte. Those against, Councillor Gleeson. Thank you, councillors. Moving on to 12.3, a mover and seconder. Thanks for that. Delegations for plumbing and drainage. Move Councillor Mitchell, seconded Councillor Poglari. I can see you're really excited about this one, councillors. Would you like to speak to it? We'll give you 10 minutes, Councillor Mitchell. There you go.
I hate to be restricted on these weighty matters. But no, jokes aside, they are. They're important delegations and there's some important works that are embedded in, so it's not done lightly. And while on the surface perhaps isn't what's going to keep you up at night and watch your Netflix special on Plumbing and Drainage Act, but it is important work, so thank you.
Any speakers against? Being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Against?
Aye.
I take that you're in favour, Councillor Tolte?
Yep, thanks, Madam Mayor.
That's unanimous, councillors. Thank you. Item 12.4, making local law and subordinate law number 7, bathing reserves. Move Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Mitchell. Would you like to speak to Councillor Boglari? I know you're ready for this one.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to move the officer's recommendation per the report for 12.4. It's a step. Wellington Point is one of our most used bathing areas for so many water activities besides bathing, and with the increase in usage, safety has become a definite issue, especially over the holiday period, and this now sums it up. It makes it an actual designated bathing area, and then when the lifeguard is there and they will put out the buoys and the flags, it then comes a bathing reserve, and at that time the restrictions come in. So it's only when the lifeguards are actually there that the restrictions are there. In other areas across our city, the depth out into the water is 400. After public consultation, this is only 200 to allow access for all the water craft such as sailboarders and kite surfers to still have access to that part of the beach, because it's one of the best sailing areas in southeast Queensland with the right winds. So we've taken that on board, we've made it 200, and there will be further public consultation once this actually gets gazetted. There will be further public consultation with all those users to ensure that it still is appropriate distances. So the users can still set up their boards and everything on the sand island and on the beach. They can walk out and they can use it. Power craft cannot come within 60 metres of the actual designated area, and the wind surface and everything, it's 10 metres from the area. So there will be some slight restrictions, but it actually won't. It's really just increasing safety. It's not restricting anybody from their sailboarding or kite surfing activities, except in the very main bathing area, which they weren't usually in that area anyway because of the safety issues. So I think it's a win all round and a definite increase in safety. So going forward, like I said, there will be further consultation, and we'll see where it could even be reduced even further in, and it will be up to the lifeguard to actually swim out or paddle out and put the buoys there so everybody knows that clear definition.
Any speakers against, councillors? Councillor Gleeson, speaker against.
Thanks, Mayor. Firstly, I don't think there's a person in the room here that's not aware of the number of bull sharks up at Wellington Point. I think I've been opposed to this all the way through, because Wellington Point, in my mind, is not an area we want to encourage people to go more than ankle deep. I certainly wouldn't let my kids go out there waist high, because there's certainly a large number of bull sharks out there, and that's well known. Secondly, the 200 metre outer boundary. So from my understanding, Councillor Boglari has just said that it won't affect paddle boarders and so forth, but my understanding is that 200 metre outer boundary means that from the mudflat there or the beach, a paddle boarder or a kayaker is not going to be allowed to come within 200 metres of that high astronomical tide mark. Is that about right?
Is there an officer that can respond?
Yeah, there is.
Oh. Sorry, Laurie, thank you. Laurie, you might...
The designated bathing reserve is quite a large reserve. The designated bathing area is defined by the two flags that are put up by the day, on the day by the lifeguard. And as Councillor Boglari mentioned, two markers at 60 metres, there's two flags, that becomes the bathing area. Now, there's no sailcraft within 10 metres of that bathing area, and no motorised craft within 60 metres of that bathing area, which is delineated, so it's a small rectangle in the larger reserve, and that rectangle can move in that reserve to suit the swimming condition at the day. They would all be set by the lifeguard on the day, and that's the only time that it's enforced is when the bathing area is marked.
And that area can be marked up to 200 metres? Is that where the 200 metres?
Oh, Laurie, without trying to be difficult, because Councillor Tolte is ringing in, it might be worthy of you coming up to Mark Edwards' microphone there so she can hear the debate. My apologies. Sorry, Councillor Tolte, if you didn't hear that.
Thank you. If I could make a comment or speak for, if there's time and you can understand me well enough, that would be good too.
I'll come to you, Councillor Tolte. Laurie?
Thank you.
So the bathing reserve at the moment is at 200 metres. In coming weeks, Council will get another report brought to Council to alter that to up to 200 metres, which will allow, if there was a certain event on that needed a 200 metre buffer, they could go out to 200 metres. But on general, normal weekend days, a lifeguard would actually set an area. It could go up to 200 metres, but it's very doubtful. He would probably only go out 50 or 60 metres where he, the single lifeguard, can manage the swimmers within the flags on that day.
Councillor Gleeson, does that answer your question?
Okay, thank you, Laurie. Another question now. I see the term in the report of in a seaward direction, the 200 metres, or the exclusion, no, that won't apply, it's 60 and 10 metres. So that's fine. Any restriction on dogs on lead in that marked area?
It's a different local law.
This is not going to change the current local law?
I understand. No.
No? Thank you. I'm still not voting for it because I think the bull sharks up there are way too much of a risk to acknowledge that area as a bathing reserve.
Well, it's great that we've got lifesavers there. Speaker 4?
Just acknowledging that
Councillor Bishop?
Yes, thank you. Just acknowledging the aquatic environment does have hazards. It's important that citizens are apprised of those, and just like the land has hazards as well. Humans live on the land and other creatures live in the sea. Getting used to that's important. I think it's very important that we have this process. One of the things that we have discussed with officers is to just clarify some of the complexity that was just raised by Officer Blacker a moment ago, just making it clear for citizens how it's actually going to work on the land down there and how it's going to roll out, because it's important that we get feedback, because there are existing uses and I don't think anyone wants to prevent those uses. We just want to make sure people are safe down there, and this is what a local law is allowing to happen through a sequence. So hopefully there will be some communication that goes out that clarifies what's intended down there, and the consultation, which is open after this, will be very important to get that feedback, and I'm sure that's going to continue to happen both through the divisional councillor and community will let us know about things down there. And I think as places become more and more frequented by people, it's important that we get these things as clear as we can. So support this absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop. Are there any speakers against? Other speakers? Councillor Tolte, a comment or question or speaker for?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to note if councillors can hear me all right. There was a terrible accident at Wellington Point some 7 years ago where a young girl from just finished year 12 was hit by a jet ski, and that's what this is meant to help avoid by separating and delineating those possible impacts. So, fully support it, and I certainly know that her mum and her family will be very glad to hear that we're doing this. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Tolte. And the officers are all nodding madly at the back of the room, and that is correct. There was an accident. Councillor Boglari's also acknowledged that, and this does help us deal with those sorts of potential accidents occurring into the future. Thank you. Any other speaker comment, Councillor Mitchell?
Yeah, I was just probably seeking some clarification from the officers too. I was just trying to dig through the detail. Is there any differentiation between the motorised craft such as jet skis, tinnies, those sort of things, versus the wonderful people we want down there, the kite surfers, the wind surfers and those. But yeah.
Yes, Councillor, anything that's motorised, the delineation away from the bathing area, which is the area marked by the flags, there's a 10 metre zone beside that that no craft can enter, and then from the 10 metre mark out to the 50 metre mark can be used by the sail craft and use kite surfaces and all that, and no motorised craft can come within 60 metres of the bathing area.
Terrific.
Thank you, Councillor. Does that answer your question? Yep. Councillor Boglai, would you like to sum up? If there are no further speakers.
Yeah, I'd just like to thank the officers for coming on board with this. It was due to public demand. And people have been swimming at Wellington Point for thousands of years. You know, the First Nations people used to gather there. So regardless of what's in the water, people are going to swim there. And I listened, you know, to Councillor Gleeson's concern about the swimmers. So I was surprised previously when you didn't support the lifesavers, which we've also put in down there for the safety of the swimmers. And that's what this is all about. So I thank the officers for also coming down with me and spending about an hour or so with all the users that were there that afternoon. And it was really good. And all the community really appreciated that. So thank you. And I'd like to...
I'll put the motion forward.
Yes, thank you.
Those in favour, councillors? Against? Motion is carried. Those in favour, Councillor Boglari, Mitchell, Gollay, Hewlett, Elliott, Hughes, Tolte, Bishop, Williams. Those against? I did mention her. She did say she was supporting it. You're right to be counted.
Yeah, I'm here. Aye.
Those against, Councillor Gleeson? That's carried. Thank you, councillors. Item 12.5, mover and seconder. Thanks, councillors. Move Councillor Gleeson, seconder Councillor Boglari. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Gleeson?
Thanks, Mayor. Local governments throughout Queensland have got a process they have to follow under legislation when they purchase goods or services from anyone. This really regards specialist litigation suppliers, local buy policy. The pre-approved suppliers don't have barristers available, and sometimes we need access or advice or action from specialist lawyers, and this delegates authority to the CEO to appoint those specialists as required.
Speaker against, Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Mayor. I am concerned about this report. Thank you, and personally through yourself to our General Counsel, Mr. Ross. I note the government regulation 2012, so we're here at 2019, and we're talking about it would be impractical or disadvantaged for council to invite quotes. So this has been a regulation and a system that we've worked under for many years, and it is now just coming to us. I understand that this is the first time it's come to us. There's no history. This is not a something that's repeated year on year, etc. So I'm really concerned a little about why we would now be bringing this to us when previously there would have been impractical and disadvantage, I would have presumed, for council. So I'm really interested as to why it's come to us now, and I feel a little uncomfortable supporting this, so I seek some further reassurance. Thank you.
Now, General Counsel Andrew, do you mind responding?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Councillor. It certainly crystallised last month when the court made some directions which brought forward a trial date where our barrister wasn't available and our court experts had a number of hours and days to prepare for a trial that we weren't prepared for. Typically the standard rules which we follow requires quotes and tenders which have statutory time periods, usually a matter of weeks, to ensure we get the best price. In that circumstances, we were left in a scenario where we didn't have an adequate control to make sure we could leverage our court experts, who we knew at the time, to get the best price. So really it's come from that scenario to make sure that any future scenarios that were replaced in that scenario, we're getting the best price for council. Other examples are similar to we leverage or bulk buy from our court experts. This will allow us to do that so we don't walk out of courtroom one with a legal team and then go into courtroom 11 with a completely different legal team, but still charging them top dollar. So this resolution will support us to leverage our best price at best time to do it quickly for council, basically.
Councillor Elliott, speaker question.
So there's no list at all. It is, because I've had some concerns of years, some legal advice we've got. So there's no actual list. It can be anybody you're going to.
There is a list. So the local buyer, which is the LGA, Local Government Association of Queensland, has a legal panel of providers. Mm. And there's over 40 firms, national firms, that are pre-approved on that list. I believe there's one barrister. That's a relatively standard barrister. Other barristers in teams, in terms of senior barristers, don't put themselves on that list, don't typically respond to quotes or tenders. We have to go to them and ask for them to represent us. So whilst there are lists, there's particular nature of work in various specialty fields where the senior counsels are not listed on those lists.
So we don't have a panel of providers. They're random.
For barristers, I'm hearing.
Yeah, for barristers.
So this is not just legal advice. Okay, these guys that go in and fight the fight after we've got the legal advice.
Okay, that's all I know. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments, councillors? So just to be clear, I might make sure councillors understand, this is not just for any regular BAU legal advice, this is for specialist litigation services. I'm just double-checking that is the case.
Oh, absolutely. So it's for particular scenarios, but particular specialist legal advice, particularly when time is of constraint and we need a response or an expert in the court quickly. The standard approach is we will always follow the standard default rules in terms of getting quotes, following our list and following pre-approved legal specialists. It was just that last month the issue crystallised from the court when they actually haven't sent it before. They brought forward a trial date where we informed the court the barrister wasn't available, where we need to engage our experts very quickly.
Sia, did you want to just add to that?
Yeah, thanks, Madam Mayor. I mean, councils that don't have an in-house legal service and have an arrangement with a legal provider would typically subcontract that work to a barrister, so council would never see it. We have an in-house legal service, therefore this direct relationship for specialist litigation suppliers is required.
So the other way around is the other councils will contract with legal firms who will then engage those barristers and experts. Exactly. Now, we could use that approach.
We have no say in that.
We could use that approach, but it would cost us more, so we don't want to do that. So that's why this resolution allows us to be more flexible on the run.
Be clear, it's really important to have the best experts when you've decided you want to defend the council decision. That is the pointy end where you need the best people in the courtroom. All right, if there are no further questions, Councillor Gleeson, did you want to sum up?
No, I'll let that go. Thanks, ma'am.
Okay, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against?
Aye.
Motion's carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Item 13.1, councillors, is delegated decisions made under delegated authority for Category 1, 2 and 3 development applications. And before I get a move and second, just acknowledge, councillors, that my daughter's family have an item here for noting in one page at the end somewhere. I once again, as I have previously, sought legal advice. It's not a conflict of interest. It's not MPI, but just for the public record, I'm letting you know it's on that list. So I have a mover and seconder. Moved Councillor Mitchell, seconded Councillor Boglari. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Mitchell?
No, I think it's all in the report there, thanks, Mick.
Any speakers against? Any questions?
Sorry, just a question on your daughter's family.
No, family and daughters.
Oh, your family?
Yeah, and with my daughters, yes.
Yeah, it's your application
It's a family unit trust, Councillor.
Family unit trust, yep. Okay,
which includes my family.
Yeah, I just didn't understand how you worded it. Sorry, thank you.
I think I might have explained it to you once before, but I'm happy for it to be on public record. Yeah. Put the motion, Councillors. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Councillor Bolle? Yep. That's unanimous. Thank you. Item 13.2 is the planning-related court matters. Councillors, move and second. I move Councillor Gleeson. Seconded Councillor Mitchell. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Gleeson?
No, thanks, Mayor. They're all on the list.
Any questions, Councillors? There being questions? I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Against?
Aye.
Motion is carried unanimously. Item 14.1 is the Amity Point Shoreline Erosion Management Plan. We're moving on because we've changed the order of business. Moved Councillor Mitchell. Seconded Councillor Bolgari. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Mitchell?
Yes, please, Madam Mayor. Yeah, this is a really important moment in time, I think. This document, the final SEMP, the process started in 2011 where Amity Point Erosion Review was taken on by that then council. 2013 began the process with letters out to residents and the consultation between multiple stakeholders commenced. The SEMP itself is a framework and a strategy to manage and respond to current or potential future erosion problems. So the hopeful adoption of the SEMP today will ensure that this is recognised as Council's formal position to those erosion issues that are facing the vulnerable foreshore at Amity Point. Importantly, it'll then facilitate the development of an implementation plan where the rubber meets the road, where the community, including private landowners, can hopefully execute the correct and agreed management of those lands. So that's what it is. I just want to recognise all the people that have been involved along the way. I've come in this council and have been pleased to be the chair of the community reference group. So firstly, I'll acknowledge the Amity Point Community Reference Group, who have been on this long journey and sometimes frustrating, but they've done a great job along with the various stakeholders. There's been a lot of state government departments involved. So we'd like to acknowledge the cooperation of the state. Multiple different Redden City Council officers, and I've had the privilege of working with several of them who have handed the baton to others, but I think it's been a challenging process and they've done an exemplary job in moving this forward. The consultants, WaterTech, Kayak, of course, Quandamooki Yirrabalibi Aboriginal Corporation have been important contributors. Yourselves, councillors, and our own ELT for moving it through the process and providing necessary funding. And within Council's Coastal Hazard Adaption Steering Group have also been an important part of this. So it's been very much a collaborative effort, challenging, and in some ways a pivotal moment of how this Council and across the state are going to manage some of the ongoing challenges of coastal adaption. So I just want to recognise all the people who have been involved up to this quite important moment in time, and this in one way is another beginning of the next stage, which is the implementation. So fingers crossed it can be adopted today to allow that next steps to move forward. But thank you.
Thank you. Just before I take on the speaker, can I maybe suggest an addition to the motion, if I may? And I apologise, Liz, but I just think it has been quite a unique and drawn-out process, and it would be, I think, important for us to acknowledge the members by writing to them, the members of the steering committee, to thank them for their commitment and perseverance. So if while I'm taking some further speakers, I imagine, Councillor Mitchell, if you'd be happy to move an amendment to reflect that we write to them individually and thank them for their participation and perseverance. And we look forward to continuing to work with them, obviously, because the journey now really just does begin. So if you're happy with that. I'll just, while I'm taking some other points, if you don't mind just joining together an addition. I'm happy if officers can take that on board without having to amend the motion.
Yeah.
Okay. But Liz says it's I'm being told it can be done administratively. I'm just getting that from the CEO, so if that's...
Yeah, yeah. Subject to its approval, but I think it's been quite a unique...
I'm comfortable with that.
Okay. Sorry, Councillor Hughes.
Thank you. My apologies, Mayor. Just one moment. My question was regarding the finances of this report, page 575, to the central reach. I'm not sure if we've got an answer here, but cost to council will be determined through implementation planning. So we obviously don't have an indicative or... How is this going to come back to us? Thanks.
Well, the next step is the implementation plan, as I understand it. Brad Alistair, do you want to just give a quick rundown? Look, we are definitely trying to encourage the individual residents to take ownership of the issues within their own boundaries, but there is another step yet to come.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Mayor, and thanks for your question, Councillor Hughes. So the next step in the process moving forward with the SEMP is that implementation plan. Naturally, the SEMP itself is an overarching strategy that comes up with a way and means as to best manage the erosion issues facing Amity Point. Through the implementation plan, we'll be able to engage consultants to work through various funding mechanisms, look at the costs associated with actually implementing what's being proposed and the detail around that. So there's approval processes associated with implementing the various works, so there's costs associated with that, and there's naturally also costs associated with the physical works themselves, so engineering design, sourcing of the rock, and the actual construction as necessary. That all depends on what the implementation comes up with through its framework. And again, those funding mechanisms will determine what the cost of council will be. Ultimately, the council would be responsible for any works on its land, and private landowners responsible for any costs on their land.
Councillor Bishop, question or comment?
So comment is just, first of all, to acknowledge that this has taken a significant amount of time for very understandable reasons. It's a complex issue in a changing environment, which is sand-based with water flowing through it. The best science is featured in a couple of hundred pages, and I think there's a bit of fingers crossed about what the future is going to be, and this is the best science that we've got. One of the other things that, as an organisation, we've been waiting for in the adoption of this report is there have been a lot of other shoreline erosion plans that have been put back pending this taking place. And so as a resident and representative of residents down in Thornside, we've been told year after year that the learning from this will become instructive for erosion management plans elsewhere, and I look forward to communication of what that learning is and how we can inform that process going forward so we can progress the learning, because these environments are multi-jurisdictional areas, and trying to get that clear is going to be really important. And I know it's been a long hold-up for places like Thornside. We've been asking for that for years. And I look forward to us moving forward with some clarity and whatever learning, and that's the question I'd like to ask, I don't know whether officers can answer on that, whatever learning we have from this, which is going to be instructive around those other shoreline erosion management plans, so that we make sure that we do touch on those things in future. Can we speak about that at this point?
If I could, maybe, and I'll refer to Alistair. I think I've been on this journey longer than pretty much anybody else. Maybe Brad's been partly there, towards the end, but the biggest learning is that having the state government sit around the table and be part of agreeing a process has been the biggest learning outcome, because in the instance of Amity Point, we're not just talking about public land, we're talking about private land, and the process of re-engineering something that's never had an engineering approval has for many decades proven to be very difficult for residents to protect their own property. So I'm happy, from my experience, getting all the state agencies, and there's a number of them, maybe four different departments, to regularly meet, to endorse, I think is the word they use, a process that will help people protect their own properties and assist council in getting to that point. Alistair, I don't know, or Brad, if you want to add to it, but that's the learning for me, and I think I've been on this journey now for 6 or 7 years with different ministers.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Mayor. In terms of learnings, I mean, moving forward, naturally being through this process, we have established a good network and a good relationship with the state and also with the community in general through those community reference groups to get that good understanding of what the community value in these various areas. As far as the SEMP in itself and its specific impact on Thornside, the coastal hazards adaptation strategy that we're working on at the moment is probably more likely to inform what happens moving forward as we move through that process. It's interested in future erosion, not necessarily current erosion, which I understand Thornside's facing at the moment. The phase one of that strategy did recognise Thornside as being an area that requires investigation, as did that strategy recognise that Amity Point required a SEMP as its management option. So, you know, certainly we've learnt what these are best applied to. Generally speaking, a SEMP is applied to a broader area with various issues and things that aren't quite as simple to answer, whereas on smaller stretches of coastline, generally concept planning, coastal process studies and the like are generally sufficient to work out how best to manage them. Again, with the SEMP in itself, the implementation plan will be when it's determined how we actually make this happen on the ground, like when the rubber hits the road, as Councillor Mitchell referred to it as. So, you know, there are various mechanisms in there that we can apply, you know, from this process.
Yeah, I just look forward to that learning, because originally we were told we can't do anything until Amity's done. We can't do anything until Amity's done. Now it's done. If we can apply whatever is robust, rather than just treating it as an isolated small little project and just can have a single solution, I think if we've got stakeholders from state that we need to be consulting with, I would really like to ensure that that does happen, that we move proactively now in addressing that long-standing issue. So thank you very much and support this. Thanks.
Councillor Elliott.
Thanks, Mayor. Look, long time coming, and as you alluded to me, you've seen about 7 years. I can remember seeing an aerial photograph from 1972 in increments, and you can spend all the money and have all the studies in the world, and I guarantee in 50 years' time, this will be 30 or 40 metres back from where it is now. And you can pour all the money into the ocean you like. You've only got to look at the central reach. And that's a 30 metre deep swirling channel. I've stood on the edge of it. I've stepped backwards really quickly. I wouldn't live there for quids. And I can remember years ago, a house in one part of there was worth $1 million. And the next morning, well, it wasn't there. And the next guy's house went from $500,000 to $1 million. But it continues to grow back. And you can put all the rock there you like. We spent $500,000, you remember, in a couple of months a few years ago. Off the cuff. Yep, let's put it. $500,000. Gone. And that will continue. You can have these studies, but at the end of the day, on this particular sand island, it is going to keep going back and back, and we can all hold hands and stand in a circle with the community. The reality is that's what's going to happen. That's what you can burn tons of cash. End of story. That's all I'm going to say.
I'll respond to that in a moment, but I've got Councillor Hewlett as well.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. As you know, I've been involved quite some years on Coochie Mudlow with their first shoreline erosion management study, and now I'm the chair of the shoreline erosion management plan, and it's I take credit to Alistair's on the team now, which is great, but I think Amity is a unique case because it's privately owned and it's a massive channel, but other areas around the city where there are sandy beaches eroding away, and those sandy beaches represent enormous tourism dollars, enormous community buy-in. Since we've done work on Wilson's Esplanade at Victoria Point, the amount of people using that beach now has grown astronomically. And I imagine the same for Wellington Point, Victoria Point. The places where we can put sand and beach nourish is vitally important for the visitors to the city and to the locals. So I encourage shoreline erosion management plan at Thornside. I'm going for the Coochie one at the moment. I'd like to get some sand replenishment at Victoria Point. It is a big issue across the city.
I think they're slightly different approaches, to be honest, but if I could just respond, I appreciate this happening way before I started working with the erosion management, the steering committee, but this actually allows residents to take care of their own property. I think that is a fundamental difference to what was happening historically by council, and you know, you're right, our planning position remains the same, it's retreat.
We don't actually encourage that. However, you know, I think it's fair to say that these residents have agreed to come together to find a way that they can work within the law to do what they can do individually, and council does have property as well. Because if one person, it's like the Raby Bay scenario, canals, if one person doesn't do it, this is going to be their challenge through the implementation plan, how they coordinate, and that is the next step. We're still not there yet. But once again, we've got a way forward from a state legislation point of view and potentially through our own DA processes. So that's what this has really been about. Any further discussion? Would you like to sum up, Councillor Mitchell?
Yeah, just briefly. I mean, it's a great discussion around the room, and coastal adaptation is something that the whole country and the whole world needs to face. So appreciate that it's taken the time that it's needed to take. It is extremely complex. Amity being first, I'd probably just make the point of it's been a bit of a poison chalice in some ways, in that it's needed to be first because it's of state significance. But that community goes through all the pain and all the challenges of developing and all their learnings that will now go forward to benefit the rest of the city. So I'm very pleased that they were first, but it's not all roses when you're first. You face all the pain and all the challenges that go along with that, and the community has shared that degree of pain and challenge. I'll also give some credit to the community. They've been very realistic. So this council has set pretty good precedences that we're not going to dig endlessly into our pockets to look after private property, and that is not currently the community expectation. Moving forward, that will be developed and formalised in implementation plans. But they have been very realistic community and are just looking forward to being able to get on with defending their own properties. Thank you. Yeah.
Any further discussion? I'll put that up. That was sum up, so I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against?
Aye.
Motion's carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. The next... There is no mayoral minute. Am I right? There is no notices of motion, so... Is that right? Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm just making sure. I feel like I've missed something, but I haven't. Cool.
Oh, that's
all right. I'll just double check.
13.3.
Yeah, that's 13.3. Will be at the end of the agenda. So what we'll do now is we'll have to move into closed session. If I get a move and second to that, and then we'll come back to 13.3 after closed session. Move, Councillor Boglari. Seconded, Councillor. We're moving into. It's at the end of the agenda. No, the agenda is the agenda, councillors. Oh, they're more than welcome to wait and come back for the decision, after the confidential decision. So that was what you decided, councillors, when you put your hand up for the order of business. Yeah, no, absolutely. But if I could firstly get a mover and second that we move into closed session. Move, Councillor Elliott. Seconded, Councillor Hughes. Those in favour? Those against?
Aye.
You don't want to move into closed session, councillor? Well, that's fine. But we are discussing appeal issues. I'm just double checking because you don't always put your hand up, councillor. Councillor Boglari, those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Williams, Councillor Tolte. Those against?
Yes.
Councillor Golay. Just for those members in the gallery who would like to return for the remaining item and decisions, if you want to just to take a seat outside, we'll send someone out to let you know when we've... Councillor Tolte, can I suggest you maybe try to amend that point two to strengthen it?
Was there any advice as to how to do that?
I'm just letting the public back into the gallery. I just want you to think about it. We're going to go through the confidential items and then come to 13.3.
Okay. All right. I'll have a look at it. Thank you.
Councillors, if I could now just bring your attention back to the agenda of 19.1. Mover and seconder for that. Thanks. Move, Councillor Boglari. Seconded, Councillor Elliott. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those in favour?
Aye.
That's the Ormiston.
Oh, okay.
Those in favour? Those against? That motion's carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Item 19.2, new community lease move. Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Gleeson. Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Councillor Tolte, you support 19.2?
Yes, thank you.
19.3, I think we have an amended motion, councillors, if I recall. Which is, I'm just making sure that's as we discussed. Point three. Mover and seconder, thanks. Move Councillor Boglari, seconder Councillor Mitchell. Those in favour? Those against? That's unanimous. Thank you, councillors. Item 19.4, mover and seconder, thanks. Move Councillor Hughes, seconded Councillor Mitchell. Those in favour? Those against?
Aye.
Motion's carried unanimously. Item 19.5, we have an alternative motion moved by Councillor Golay. Move Councillor Golay, seconded Councillor Boglari. In favour, councillors? Against? That's carried unanimously. Councillor Tolte, you're right with that one?
Yes, thanks, Madam Chair.
Okay, that brings us back to item 13.3. Yep. An alternative motion, councillors? You happy to move that, Councillor Tolte?
Yes, sorry, Madam Chair. I was just trying to reword it, but
I'll just get a mover and seconder and we can then talk to it, and if we need to amend it, we'll do it on the floor. So move Councillor...
Okay.
Move Councillor Gleeson, seconded Councillor... Just, it's the alternative motion's there in front of you, and we can debate it.
Good.
Oh. Councillor Tolte, happy for you to move it and Councillor Gleeson to second it. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Tolte, the way from where you are?
Can I move you... sorry, this is a clarification. Do we have to move the officers?
You've moved the amended...
Alternate?
You've moved the alternative, the amended...
I've moved the alternate. Yes. I'm happy to move that. Thank you.
All right. Well, we've already done that, and we've seconded it. So I'm just now asking you if you want to speak to it, Councillor.
Yes, if you can hear me well enough. Thank you, Madam Chair. My concern with this is, first of all, my concern has been the viability of what's been put forward in the business case. I do find it difficult to believe that this area, it may be ahead of its time, that this area will carry a tourism business of this size. And so I have concerns around that. However, officers have assessed the business case reports and have found that that's satisfactory. So my attention has been really turned to the impact of the development on the local community, particularly concerned with the way the buildings to the northeast will overlook the immediate neighbours. And I'm concerned for the safety of visitors who may be staying there, who may be trying to use the walkways that are indicated in the site design to get down to the Logan River. I think that it needs to be very clearly demarcated and signed to ensure that they stay on that property and that those people are kept safe, and also that they don't wander into neighbouring properties where they might come in contact with large animals. There's a lot of cattle and horses and even some camels in that vicinity. So the purpose of the amendment to the officer's recommendation is just to try to ensure that those local impacts are considered and negotiated further with the officers. Thank you.
Speaker against? No speakers. Any other comments, councillors? Councillor Boglari?
I'm listening to the local councillor, and she's concerned about the privacy of the properties next door. I was just wanting to ask for clarity. Is provide design criteria enough, or do we need to clarify that is provide landscape and building design criteria? Do we need to expand that a bit?
Officers, is there enough direction in that to achieve Councillor Tolte's, or landscape and building design? Sorry. So I think the issues that Councillor Boglari and Councillor Tolte are trying to address is that we want to make sure that the rural aspect and privacy of adjoining landowners is protected in some way. So obviously we don't want buildings overlooking because of topography, etc. And that can be dealt with through building design, or it could probably be dealt with vegetation screening. So that was one of them, and I think the other issue that I heard was the fact that there'll be livestock and properties surrounding there. We want to make sure that any tourists that are visiting our Redlands Coast hinterland have, you know, aren't going to be faced with the fencing is adequate to keep them separate.
So the option two, or the second part of the amended motion, we believe is sufficient to cover that sort of design requirement that's that you're seeking. As this is a recommendation for a preliminary approval, there will be an opportunity at such time that a development permit is issued to further condition those specifics.
Okay, that answers your question, I think, Councillor Boglari and Councillor Tolte.
Thank you. And yes, thank you. The other issue there that Councillor Tolte has is the koala trees in the bushland habitat. Looking at the plans, most of the dwellings that are proposed are in cleared sections at the moment. How much is going into the bushland habitat now? Like, what is the...
If you see the site plan, it's only on the on-site waste treatment area which is encroaching to the bushland habitat. So the rest of the site is...
So it's only the water treatment area?
Yep, wastewater treatment area, yep.
And with Councillor Tolte's concerns there about non-juvenile koala trees in that area, is the function of the water treatment work still going to be efficient by keeping the trees?
Yep, the applicant got to find that solution really to decrease the expanse of that wastewater treatment plant, either find a better solution or decrease it, so which might result in decreasing of units as well.
Okay, but it is doable.
Yep,
just doable, yep. Save those trees. Okay, thank you. I just want to make sure that the local councillor's concerns were totally covered in that writing.
Councillor Bishop?
Thank you, Councillor Boglari.
Yeah, thank you. I just did Councillor Tolte want to say something? Sorry. Okay.
No, sorry. Just thanking Councillor Boglari.
Thank you.
He's been helping
me. Yeah. So I can obviously the developers applicants have gone to a great deal of detail to provide a solution that is not common in that area, and wishing them all the best for that. Just one of the issues with regards to tourism accommodation in that area, what is, just from my understanding, what is the length of stay that is anticipated for us to be sure that use is for tourist accommodation, and what would be the case, and what would be the options for us and for them, should people stay for longer periods? Like, what's the definition, and how are we going to manage that? Because it's not in a typical area where we would expect high volume tourism, and if they've got a great new market opportunity, it's great for Redlands Coast. But just want to clarify that, if I could, just for my own understanding.
So this application was lodged under our now superseded Redlands Planning Scheme. In the definition of like short-term accommodation, we didn't have a specified time frame under that scheme. Under the city plan, we do. I think it's generally 3 months is the cutoff. So if we're in a position to issue a development permit, we could condition the maximum length of stay on that and then it would become a compliance matter if it wasn't being dealt with.
I do think that that's important if that's to be, if that's otherwise an outstanding gap, because I'm sure that, I don't want to refer to them, but I'm sure that the intent is, as requested for tourist accommodation, I would feel comfortable if we were to have that in place. Do you believe that would be in line with the expectations and be seen as appropriate? Because I suggest that we should have it there.
Well, the only way to guarantee that, I imagine, is if you want to bring it back at that point in time. If you want to bring
does
back
it, does
when,
it need
when,
to
when it actually converts from a preliminary approval to a permit, you could actually request it to come back to council.
Is that something that officers can keep us apprised of as we go forward? Or should it be changed now? That's a question.
So I think it would be a reasonable condition if we were issuing a permit. It's probably not something that we would need to condition as part of a preliminary approval. But the application can definitely come back to general meeting if the applicant was looking to upgrade from a preliminary approval to a permit.
It's just part of the planning scheme. So you don't want to condition everything that's just part of the scheme. That's when you get the approval, that's part of it. That's it.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I honestly think the applicant has addressed a lot of the issues on this site. Environmental issues have been addressed. And this city is screaming out for tourist accommodation. I hear so many people saying that they want to come down here and there's nowhere to stay. I mean, it's not like it's out in the boonies. It's only just out in southern Redland Bay. So you can go to places all over southeast Queensland where there's accommodation outside the city area. I mean, I think it represents a great opportunity for the city to start boosting its tourism numbers and its accommodation.
And that's why there's a preliminary approval in place. Councillor Mitchell?
Yes, well, firstly, I'd like to recognise the great debate and concern that some councillors have raised and the officers and the work that's been done to get us to this point. But I also want to say welcome to a great opportunity for our area. I think it's a high-end tourism resort. I think the applicant has done well, and it needed to do well to reflect the nature of the site and indeed the offerings of our Redlands Coast into the future. So I'd just like to welcome the preliminary approval that may go through today and encourage everyone to continue working in that spirit of cooperation to actually deliver on the promise that's there. Thanks.
Any other questions, councillors? Councillor Tolte, would you like to sum up?
Oh, only to say, Madam Mayor, we always pay attention to the details of something that is this significant. Without wanting to sound negative about it, we're very pleased to have someone who wants to invest in the city. We want 30 new jobs locally. That's a wonderful development, and it's a testament to the priorities that were put forward by council in the last 4 or 5 years to increase our local economic drivers. And I hope that it's very successful and it is an international tourist draw card in the long run. But we do need to protect those local aspects that made it possible to want to invest there in the first place. So thank you.
Okay, no further discussion, Councillor. Put the motion. Those in favour? Against?
Aye.
Those in favour, Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Williams, Councillor Tolte, those against, Councillor Hughes. Thank you, councillors. I declare the meeting closed at 12:57.